Here, I shoved the Bible into the pastor's hand. This is for you, to keep. The translator repeated the words, but still the pastor did not understand. Whose is it? He said. It's yours, to keep, to own. When Hans and I left that day, our chests ached from the embraces of that group of elders, for now their pastor had a Bible of his very own. A Bible he did not have to return at the end of the service, a Bible to pick up whenever he wanted, a Bible to read and to love. And as we left Russia, I knew there was a task ahead of me bigger than any I had yet attempted behind the Iron Curtain. I had to talk some organization into printing Slavic language Bibles in pocket-sized editions, and I had to bring these books into Russia not by the hundreds, but by the thousands. Chapter 19. Bibles to the Russian Pastors. The one thing on my mind now was the need for a Russian pocket Bible. It became an obsession with me. I made the rounds of the Bible societies, but even when a society agreed that such an edition was possible in theory, there were practical problems. The American Bible Society, which had been supplying me with Russian Bibles free of charge, although sympathetic, could not see their way clear to printing a special edition just for this operation. The British and Foreign Bible Society was in the same position. The Dutch Bible Society was committed to work in Africa and Indonesia and did not handle East Europe languages. "Why don't you print your own pocket Bible?" said Philip Wetstra one evening when I was talking over my problem with him. "Very funny. I'm serious. You know exactly what it is you want. Print it yourself." "You must be dreaming, Mr. Wetstra. That would cost at least $5,000. Where would I get $5,000?" Mr. Wetstra looked at me sadly. "After all this time you ask that," he said. Of course he was right. It would not be I who supplied the funds for such a project. It would be the Lord. Before I left the Wetstras that night, I knew that I was launched onto another grand experiment, the grandest yet. This time, though, it took longer than usual for the dream to unfold, and in the meanwhile there was the usual work to be done. Having Hans as part of this work was even better than I had imagined. We formed a team, one strong where the other was weak. It was while we were in Bulgaria one hot summer night in 1962 that Hans suddenly said, "Andrew, it is time we prayed for a new team member." I was sitting up in bed with the perspiration drying on me, trying to write a letter home. "Yep. That's right," I said absently. "You remember when the visa finally came through to go to Czechoslovakia? Only you were in East Germany and I was in Russia. If there were more of us, we wouldn't have to make these choices." "Yep, that's right." "You're not listening,"